Iranians hold rallies across the country to denounce the latest riots that have erupted in a number of cities over the past week. Tehran summons the British ambassador to protest the role of London-based Persian language media in inciting riots in Iran. And Italians are voting in early elections that are forecast to return Italy's most right-wing government since World War II. I'm Behruz Najafi. Welcome. Iranians are out on the streets across the nation to denounce the latest riots that have erupted in a number of cities over the past week. A crowd of protesters are rallying to denounce the desecration of sanctities and acts of vandalism during the riots. The rioters blocked the streets, vandalizing public property and police vehicles and setting fire to dozens of ambulances. That followed the death of a 22-year-old woman earlier this month after she was taken into a police station. Tehran Police Commander Hossein Rahimi has rejected claims that Mahsa Amini was physically assaulted. Officials say that she died of medical conditions.
Mahsa Amini, a name that has hit the headlines over the past days for her death in hospital after her detention by the Iranian police over her non-compliance with the Islamic dress code. While demonstrations have been held across the country demanding clarification regarding her death, there have been violent protests and riots leading to clashes with police and acts of vandalism against public property.
It's not about hijab in Iran. What is important is Islam, that Western countries want to get our hijab, our Islam from us.
Those who are rioting are in fact mercenaries who are paid by Iran's enemies. I advise all my fellow Iranians to be wise and cautious and stay away from the seditions plotted by our enemies.
Iranian officials say the death of Mahsa Amini is being exploited by foreign-backed organized groups to instigate chaos and wreak havoc across the country. On Friday, upon returning from New York, Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi said people's demand will be definitely heard. However, he noted that jeopardizing public security will not be tolerated. 22-year-old Mahsa was an Iranian Kurd from the city of Saqqez in Kurdistan province. On September 13th, she was on a trip to Tehran with her family when she was arrested by police. CCTV footage released by police showed that she passed out at the police station. 3 days later, she died in hospital.
While police have dismissed allegations that Mahsa was mistreated during detention, Iranian authorities have given assurance a thorough investigation into her death is underway. Now, many Iranians say they're all grieved for Mahsa's unfortunate death, yet they say the issue should not divide Iranians and harm national security. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Now, Iran summoning the British and Norwegian ambassadors in connection with the recent riots in the country. The foreign ministry says it called on the British ambassador to protest the hostile propaganda of London-based Persian language media against the Islamic Republic. The ministry lodged Iran's strong protests with the British government, saying that the media in Britain's hosting have been provoking riots in Iran over the past days. The ambassador was told that such measures represent an interference in Iran's domestic affairs and as acts against its national sovereignty. The Norwegian ambassador was also summoned over what a foreign ministry said were meddlesome, false, and partial comments by the country's parliament speaker. The foreign ministry protested to Oslo about such unconstructive remarks and interference in Iran's domestic issues. The political analyst Abbas Ruhollah Rezvi told us a short while ago how the initial protests were hijacked by Western media to present a distorted image of Iran.
Not all those who were protesting, not all those who were against what took place had the same stand and same idea. A category of them were those who were always looking after regime change in Iran. Several of them are, you know, those directly or indirectly related to the Westerns. But put that aside, they were, there was another category of people who were not looking after regime change, but they were against this hijab law and regulations in Iran. So they started to protest. And there were a third category of those who were protesting. They were not against hijab itself. They were against this particular attitude of implementation of law, and they were looking after a better way of implementation of the hijab rule and law in Iran. So beside them, the fourth category of those who were in support of the system, whom you are, observing currently in streets of different cities of Iran today, that they are showing that they are against what took place. But unfortunately, when the Western media, when the mainstream media was coming and trying to portray the image of Iran, they were just showing those who were basically looking after regime change. And let's not forget, being realistic on ground, when you are, you know, provoking people to come to the streets, show their anger, the result will be violence. I don't want to call all those protesting to be agents of West. No, this is not the case. So why Iran is being highlighted so? Why anything inside Iran that could have taken place is becoming too violent inside at the streets of Iran? We cannot, of course, it has been repeated again and again. You can't ignore the foreign factors here.
The Iranian foreign minister says that Americans have sent messages recently indicating preparedness to clinch a deal in the Vienna talks. Hossein Abdullahian is in New York now to hold meetings on the fringes of the UN General Assembly's annual session. He says Iran has responded by telling the American side that only with a realistic approach and goodwill would it be possible to clinch a deal. He said that Iran is ready for a lasting agreement on the revival of the 2015 deal, and that is Washington that needs to make a decision that would lead to a stronger and durable agreement. Back in 2018, the U.S. withdrew from the multilateral pact, throwing its fate into disarray. Iran, in response, scaled back some of its nuclear commitments. Several rounds of talks were then held in Vienna to try and revive the accord. Iran is criticizing the United States for making exceptions to its communication sanctions when it comes to undermining the country's security and stability. Foreign Ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani says by loosening a number of communication sanctions while keeping a maximum pressure campaign in place, the U.S. is only trying to provoke instability in Iran. Kanani called those tactics hypocritical and nefarious designs aimed at violating Iran's national sovereignty. He said that they will not go unanswered. The U.S. Treasury has issued a license to loosen internet sanctions on Iran, allegedly to support the free flow of information. But the Iranian government says it's restricted access to internet in some areas to deal with violent riots and vandalism. The plight of Palestinian geopolitics and culture are being featured at the third edition of the Palestine Festival that kicked off in Rome. The initiative includes roundtables on the Palestinian diaspora with a special focus on Latin American countries.
Rome's suburban Tiburtino Terzo Quarter is once again home to a new edition of the Palestine Festival, a four-day initiative organized by the Palestinian Association of Rome and Lazio Region and the Palestinian Youth Association, created by Palestinian expat Youssef Salman with the aim to foster intercultural understanding and promoting Palestinian culture in the Italian capital. This year's edition of the festival also has a focus on Palestine and Latin America.
Many Latin American countries have been supporting the Palestinian cause. That's what I told to the people who attended the meeting this evening. I also told them about our President Abbas being in New York to discuss a two-state solution. But when will Israel sit at the negotiation table?
A number of Latin American heads of state came out and spoke loudly, proclaiming the rights of the Palestinians and denouncing the Israeli persecution against them at the UN over the past days. At Rome's Palestine Festival, diplomats from the Bolivian, Cuban, and Venezuelan embassies reiterated their support for the cause of Palestinian people in order to restore their legitimate rights. A commemoration of Shirin Abu Akleh was held during a panel on the dreadful living conditions of Palestinian journalists in the occupied territories. Recently, a new forensic analysis proved that the Israeli sniper who killed her could see that Shirin was a journalist before firing the bullet.
In the West Bank, journalists are shot, wounded, or arrested. In the Gaza Strip, there is no internet, no power. We cannot work. Israel simply doesn't want us to do our job. 55 Palestinian journalists have been killed by the Israeli forces in about 20 years. In regards to Shirin, Israeli soldiers knew full well she was a journalist when they killed her. It was a warning sent to all of us journalists in Palestine.
The Palestine Festival will continue on Saturday with an initiative commemorating the Sabra and Shatila massacre and a conference on Italy's and the EU's political stance on the plight of the Palestinians. The festival will end on Sunday. Max Civili, Rome.
Israeli settlers have once again stormed the Al-Aqsa Mosque in what Palestinians view as a major act of desecration against the holy site. A group of settlers entered a site under protection of the military this morning. Just days ago, a Zionist group announced plans to increase the visits during the Jewish New Year holidays beginning on Sunday. The visits are highly controversial because non-Muslims are banned from worshiping at the site under a decades-long agreement between Israel and Jordan, the custodian of the mosque. Just ahead of the Jewish holidays, the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas warned against continued intrusions, saying that Israel would be responsible for any consequences. The movement warned that desecrating the holy mosque could lead to a major battle that would end the regime. Now tensions continue to simmer in the Israeli-occupied West Bank, where regime forces have killed another Palestinian. Three Palestinians were also injured during clashes that took place after Israeli forces stormed the city of Nablus early this morning. Israel frequently launches raids to intimidate and arrest Palestinians. Reacting to the latest incursion, Hamas has held resistance. The movement says that the clashes show the Palestinians' power and the readiness to enter into conflict to defend the Al-Aqsa Mosque. Israeli forces have killed around 100 Palestinians in the West Bank this year alone, making it the deadliest year since 2015. On Saturday, they killed a Palestinian, claiming that he attempted a ramming attack, an allegation that Palestinians deny. Mona Kendall joined us earlier with some details on the Hamas reaction to the latest Israeli aggression against Palestinians.
The Palestinian Resistance Movement revealed, issued a statement saying that Palestinians will continue to be engaged in the different forms of resistance and struggle, and that it's the normal response to the ongoing Israeli crimes here in the occupied West Bank, Israeli settlers' raids to the Al-Aqsa Mosque, and the least to do is to defend the Al-Aqsa Mosque, Al-Quds, and the whole Palestinian occupied territories, and as a natural response would be different forms of resistance, fighting the Israeli soldiers, and the more Palestinian martyrs would be killed by the Israeli forces, this would even strengthen the Palestinians while they are united in the face of the Israeli forces, the Israeli regime, and their atrocities.
Let's take a look at Europe. Italians are casting their ballots in early elections for the lower house and Senate. The vote is forecast to return the most right-wing government since the Second World War and usher in the country's first woman prime minister. A right-wing alliance led by Giorgia Meloni's Brothers of Italy party appeared on course for a clear victory when the last opinion polls were published 2 weeks ago. But there has been speculation that support for the left-winning five-star movement has also picked up recently. That could jeopardize the rightist alliance's chances of winning a majority in Senate. But whatever the result, Meloni would be the obvious candidate for premier as leader of the right-wing alliance. The early elections were triggered by party infighting that brought down Prime Minister Mario Draghi's National Unity government in July. North Korea has launched a single ballistic missile at the sea off its east coast ahead of a visit to the neighboring south by a top U.S. official. South Korea says the short-range ballistic missile flew around 600 kilometers before landing in the sea. Seoul has called the launch an unjustifiable act of provocation, saying that the military is in full readiness to respond to any threat. U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris is planning to visit Seoul next week. Also starting Monday, South Korean American forces will be holding massive four-day military exercises. Nuclear-powered aircraft carrier USS Ronald Reagan has already arrived in South Korea in preparation for the war games. The South and the U.S. routinely conduct drills in the area, and Pyongyang regards them as a rehearsal for invasion. Jennifer Chang tells us why the number of missile launches by North Korea has picked up pace recently.
This was the first test by North Korea of a ballistic missile in nearly 4 months. So this was serious indeed. On June 5th, North Korea fired 8 short-range ballistic missiles all in one day. And it has conducted an unprecedented number of missile tests, including 17 ballistic missile tests and 2 cruise missile tests this year. This is largely due to the breakdown of talks between the U.S. and North Korea about the denuclearization issue of North Korea. There was a disagreement between the North Korean leader Kim Jong-un and U.S. President Donald Trump at their historic summits. The last one in 2019, especially after that, there were no further real discussions of denuclearization between the two nations.
All right, that brings us to the end of this broadcast from Tehran.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Listeners special. In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and warm greetings to you all. Welcome to this week's edition of Listeners Special on this Sunday, September 25th, 2022. I'm Atefe Erfani, hosting this program today. And accept our condolences to you on the passing away anniversary of Prophet Muhammad, the Prophet of Islam. Blessings of God upon him and his progeny, as well as the martyrdom anniversary of the second infallible heir of Prophet Muhammad, Imam Hassan Mujtaba, peace upon him. This is another edition of Listeners Special, and as you know, Listeners Special is the Sunday program where your views are presented through emails, letters, and messages. So please contact us and tell us what you think about IRIB English radio broadcast. And if you have any message for our listeners around the world, then you can record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard in this program. And as usual, many of you have taken the trouble of sending us reception reports. These reception reports are very helpful to us, especially to our technicians and engineers, because these reception reports enable us to provide a better service to our listeners around the world. All of you who have sent in a reception report will be receiving an electronic QSL card from us. And here I truly appreciate those of our listeners who have kindly sent us reception reports, including Rob Den Boer from the Netherlands, Olof Rotavara from Finland, and Kurt Ettlinger from Germany. And we have also received so many emails and letters from around the world, which I mentioned some of their names here. And later during the program, I will read these emails or letters, including Anwar Iqbal from Bangladesh has sent us an email. Marta from India has sent us an email. We've received an email from Australia from David Foster, and from Finland, we have an email from David Mabi. Please stay with us. Welcome back. This is Listeners Special, and here we've received an email from Bangladesh from Anwar Iqbal. Anwar Iqbal says, "Dear staff, with due respect, we would like to say that we, the club members of World Radio Listeners Club, want to listen your radio program regularly. We also want to know more about your country. Please send us your frequency and program schedule with timetable. Also send us your books, magazines, poster, and other promotional materials if possible." Salam and warm greetings to you, Anwar Iqbal, and thank you very much for sending us this email. Unfortunately, sending any material on behalf of IRIB English Radio is halted due to the global pandemic. So you should refer to our website in order to find the frequency schedule. With this address, www.parstoday.com/en. And to know more about Iran, you can listen to our programs. You can follow our programs, which introduce Iran in details. Thank you again for sending us this email. My colleagues will soon send you an electronic QSL card as verification. And Marta from India has sent us an email. He or she says, I am a listener of your radio service. I enjoy listening to news, world reports, traditional music, culture, and your mailbox program. At some time, your frequency is very poor. Please change your signal. First of all, salam and warm greetings to you from Tehran, the Islamic Republic of Iran, especially from IRAB English Radio staff to you, Marta from India. Thank you very much for sending us this email, and sorry for the trouble you had regarding the frequency. As you said, the frequency was poor, but we will fix it very soon if the trouble is on our behalf. Thank you again. Please accept our electronic QSL card as a verification. Wish you the best. Write to us soon and tell us your views about IRIB English radio programs. And after a short break, I will be back with you. And from Australia, from Southern Hemisphere, we've received an email from David Foster. David Foster says, greetings from Australia. I was very pleased to hear the IRIB English radio few days ago. I would be most grateful if you could verify that this report is correct with your verification QSL card or an electronic QSL card. Can you mention on the card that it was an IRIB program with details? Thank you for your time and looking forward to hearing from you. Best wishes from Australia. Salam and warm greetings to you from Tehran, the Islamic Republic of Iran, especially from IRIB English radio staff. Please accept our gratitudes to you for sending us this email. So it's also an honor to have you as a listener, David Foster from Australia. Again, thank you, and accept our electronic QSL card, of course, with the details as a verification. We're looking forward to hearing from you very soon, David. Wish you all the best. And let's see. Yes, here we have another email from Finland, from David Moby. Let's see what David says. Dear friends at IRIB English Radio, a couple of months ago, I sent you a reception report, which you kindly read in your listeners' special program. Since then, I've listened to your evening broadcast starting at 19:20 from time to time. I thought you might like to get another reception report from me containing some good news. I listened to you and the sound quality was much improved. The modulation level sound loudness was about 25% to 30%, which made audibility easier. I always enjoy listening to you and getting directly the Islamic Republic of Iran's view on world events. This is most useful. Thank you very much. Listeners special is always enjoyable. And thanks again for mentioning my earlier report. I would definitely appreciate a program about the basic concept of Islam. So many people here in the West have absolutely little idea of what Islam really is. Perhaps you have such a broadcast. Please advise me. Greater understanding would definitely further the cause of world peace, in my view. I hope this email finds you in good health. I would really appreciate you for sending me an electronic QSL. In the meantime, I listen to you when I can and enjoy your broadcast very much. First of all, salam and warm greetings to you from Tehran, the Islamic Republic of Iran, and from IRIB English radio staff to you, David Mabi from Finland. And please accept our warm and deep appreciations to you for sending us such detailed, email. You described the quality of the programs, the quality of the sound, and it was great. Your email really made my day. It was great. Thank you for your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio and the programs, and especially many thanks. Please accept our particular thanks for letting us know your opinion about the programs. As you said, you want more programs on Islam and the real Islam, which is tarnished in the Western world. So please accept our appreciations to you. write to us soon and tell us your views, more views about IRIB English radio programs. My colleagues will soon send you an electronic QSL card as verification. David Mabi from Finland, wish you all the best. We are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. So, dear listeners, here we come to the end of this edition of Listeners Special. But before that, please accept our condolences to you on the passing away anniversary of the Prophet of Islam, Prophet Muhammad. Blessings of God upon him and his progeny, as well as the martyrdom anniversary of the second infallible heir of Prophet Muhammad, Imam Hassan Mujtaba, peace upon him. Please keep in touch with IRIB English Radio and Listeners, a special program. Have a good time and goodbye.
Dear listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We'll be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send your emails to EnglishRadio@irib.ir. That is one word, EnglishRadio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at www.pasttoday.com/en. Our phone number is 00982122013720. Once again, our phone number is 00982122013720. Our profile is also in Facebook. Our address is www.facebook.com/pasttodayenglish. Thank you all.
Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
You're listening to the program The Key on IRIB English Radio with Shiraz Hossein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program, The Key, here at IRIB English Radio. Today on The Key, we're going to be examining a question that sometimes people ask. And that question is about praising a person in the presence of that person. So sometimes we have no choice but to praise a person while that person is present. Let's say that you want to get your friend a job, right? So you take your friend, and you know the boss of the company where you want to get your friend a job at. So you take your friend there, and obviously, when you're talking to the owner of the company, the boss of the company, the manager of the company, and to get this person a job, you have to praise the person. You have to say, okay, this person, he's qualified, he's a good person, You know, he's an honest person, right? So you have no choice but to praise him, right? So at the same time, we know that there are some hadiths out there, right, that say that it's not good to praise a person to his face, right, or in his presence. This is something bad, right? In fact, in one hadith, it's been mentioned that it's almost as if you have cut the neck of the person, you've beheaded him, it's so bad. So how do we resolve this paradox here, this contradiction here? On one hand, we have to praise this person, it's necessary, it's even a good deed. On the other hand, you know, in some hadiths, it's been considered as something bad and something immoral. So in order to resolve this problem and answer the question, we can say this. First of all, some of these ahadiths that have been mentioned or alluded to, are actually ahadiths which have been mentioned in the collections of hadiths, in which usually the chain of narrations of those hadiths have not been mentioned. And because of that, these hadiths, these traditions in the parlance of the science of diraya and the scrutiny and examination of hadiths, are considered weak hadiths and unreliable, right? Nevertheless, even if we overlook this fact, if we pay attention to the hadiths themselves, we can come to the conclusion that the whole purpose of the prohibition of praising somebody in their presence is not to go overboard in the praise of the person, not to overflatter the person, right? But in the hadiths themselves, there is an allusion to the fact that if you want to praise a person, it's possible to do so with certain conditions. Like you should say that, well, I know, as far as I know, this person is a good person. As far as I know, God knows better, but as far as I know, this person is an honest person. He's a knowledgeable person. He has the credentials needed for this job, right? So if you add these clauses, you speak in a precautious way, and then there's nothing wrong with it. And according to some other hadiths, it's been mentioned that overly praising somebody, meaning praising somebody with qualities that the person doesn't really have, this is what we consider as a flattery, and which is considered something bad. Not simply praising a person with those qualities that we know the person has and are really possessed by the person. There's nothing wrong with it. And in certain cases, like we mentioned, it could be necessary, it could be obligatory if we want to help the person, or, you know, it could even be recommended, right? Like, for example, let's say that you want to get your friend married, right? You're trying to get two people married. Obviously, when you're trying to bring these two people together to get married, you have to praise, you know, one party for the other one. Otherwise, you know, they're not going to accept the marriage, right? So these are things that, you know, are exceptions and or even outside of the rule mentioned in the hadith. There's nothing wrong with it. Thank you for joining us here on The Key. We were looking at flattery and when is it permissible and when it's not permissible. Until next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Shiraz Hussein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy, on the program The Key on IRIB English Radio.
You can also send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Google, one of the largest and most influential organizations in the modern world, is filled with ex-CIA agents. Stay with us for an article in this regard, written by Alan McLeod, journalist. This article is published under the heading, National Security Search Engine. Google's ranks are filled with CIA agents. Here's the story. Google, one of the largest and most influential organizations in the modern world, is filled with ex-CIA agents studying employment websites and databases. MinPress has ascertained that the Silicon Valley giant has recently hired dozens of professionals from the Central Intelligence Agency in recent years. Moreover, an inordinate numbers of these recruits work in highly politically sensitive fields, wielding considerable control over how its products work and what the world sees on its screens and its search results. Chief amongst these is the Trust and Safety Department, whose staff, in the words of then-Google Trust and Safety Vice President Christy Cangallo, decide what content is allowed on our platform. In other words, setting the rules of internet, determining what billions see and what they do not see. Before Google, Cangallo had been President Obama's deputy White House chief of staff for implementation and is currently chief of staff at the Department of Homeland Security. Many of the team helping Cangallo make calls on what content should be allowed in Google searches and on platforms like YouTube were former CIA employees. For example, Jacqueline Lepore spent more than 10 years at the CIA, where she served as a leading U.S. government expert on security challenges in South Asia and the West Asia region and go-to writer of quickly needed papers for the U.S. president. She joined Google in 2017 and is currently a senior intelligence collection and trust safety manager. Between 2010 and 2015, Jeff Lazarus was an economic and political analyst for the CIA. In 2017, he was hired as a policy advisor for trust and safety at Google, where he worked on suppressing extremist content. He moved to Apple in 2021. Ryan Foggett spent 8 years as a CIA officer. Then in 2019, Google convinced him to leave and become a senior manager of trust and safety. As a director of trust and safety, Brian Weisbard led teams that adjudicated the most sensitive YouTube trust and safety escalations globally and enforced the most urgent and highest priority misinformation and sensitive content decisions. Between 2006 and 2010, he was an intelligence officer with the CIA. He's now a director at Facebook. Like Lepore and Lazarus, Nick Roseman concentrated on Iraq while he was a CIA analyst. Since January, he has been a senior manager in Google's Trust and Safety Division. Jacob Barrett, Google's global lead for safe browsing operations, was an analytic lead and open source officer at the CIA between 2007 and 2013, and a 12-year CIA political and leadership analyst, Michelle Towarowski, left the agency in 2019 to take a job as the intelligence analyst lead in trust and safety at YouTube. The problem with former CIA agents becoming the arbiters of what is true and what is false and what should be promoted and what should be deleted is that they cut their teeth at the notorious organization whose job it was to inject lies and false information into the public discourse to further the goals of the national security state. John Stockwell, former head of a CIA task force, explained on camera how his organization infiltrated media departments the world over, created fake newspapers and news agencies, and planted fake news about Washington's enemies. I had propagandists all over the world, he said. This continues to this day, with the CIA promoting dubious stories about the so-called Havana Syndrome. And all this is to say nothing about the coup attempts on foreign governments, the drug and weapons smuggling, and the worldwide network of black sites where thousands are tortured. Furthermore, many of the ex-CIA employees listed participated in some of the worst crimes against humanity of the 21st century, the invasions of Afghanistan and Iraq, and are clearly proud of it. So while there is admittedly a limited pool of qualified people for roles in cybersecurity, it is wholly inappropriate that Google is employing so many spooks to run their most sensitive, influential operations. And it is especially troubling that so many of the individuals mentioned throughout were plucked directly from the CIA to work at Google, a fact that suggests that either Google is actively recruiting from the intelligence services or that there is some sort of backroom deal between Silicon Valley and the national security state. Elizabeth Murray, a retired intelligence agent who spent 27 years at the CIA and other intelligence organizations, explained how Google might benefit from hiring former spies. By snagging a CIA employee, a company can save a considerable sum, she told Min Press, noting that these individuals have been highly trained and likely have a security clearance, something that is exceptionally different to attain in civilian organizations. In terms of benefit to the CIA, a CIA officer could spend several years acquiring a unique set of skills at a social media conglomerate and then return to the agency, paralyzing their newly acquired expertise to the benefit of the agency, Murray added. Even if there is nothing explicitly nefarious about this relationship, it still means that Google will start to think like and see problems the same way as the CIA does. Google has become immensely powerful, transforming itself into a behemoth that dominates online communication, commerce, information gathering, entertainment, and more. But Google is different. You can ignore or choose not to use those other platforms. Google, on the other hand, is far too big to escape from. An inordinate amount of Google's intelligence and security teams appear to come from the intelligence and security services. These include the following individuals: Deborah Witowski, who between 1999 and 2018 rose up the CIA's ranks, becoming chief of staff to the director. She left the agency for Google, where she is now vice president of global intelligence. Chelsea Magnant also left the CIA for Google in 2018, leaving an 8-year career as a political analyst for a job as a global threat analyst for the tech giant. Young Sok Lee spent 22 years at the CIA, leaving to take a position in global risk analysis and global security at Google. In May, he was promoted to become a director, and so many other people in the list. The professional background of so many of his security and risk management staff may go a long way to explaining why Google seems focused on countering threats from official enemy states of the United States. This is despite the fact that the United States is carrying out the largest and most extensive attempt in history to manipulate the internet. A long expose in Newsweek last year detailed how the Pentagon alone fields a clandestine army of at least 60,000 individuals whose job it is to ruthlessly run national security state propaganda campaigns online. calling it the largest undercover force the world has ever known. The expose explained that there are the cutting-edge cyber fighters and intelligence collectors who assume false persons online, employing non-attribution and misattribution techniques to hide the who and the where of their online presence while they search for high-value targets and collect what is called publicly accessible information or even engage in campaigns to influence and manipulate social media. Thus, it is clear that former CIA personnel are deeply embedded within the Silicon Valley giant. Of course, Google is a huge company with thousands of employees. It could therefore be argued that it is unsurprising that some number of former national security state agents work for it, especially those who have the rare and highly developed skills necessary to preside over user privacy and safety. But this tolerance of spooks in the ranks is not applied evenly. Indeed, the very idea seems absurd. Yet dozens of Google employees casually note on public websites that they worked for the CIA and appear to see that as entirely unproblematic. Therefore, this relationship is, at best, inappropriate, and at worst, a U.S. government power play to control cyberspace. Google users frequently say they want more agency over their data, but the only agency they get is the central intelligence kind.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5 and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Thank you. log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day with Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program, Hadith of the Day, here at IRIB English Radio. Today on Hadith of the Day, we would like to offer our condolences to our esteemed listeners, because as you know, today is the demise of the Holy Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, and also the martyrdom of his grandson, Imam Hassan alayhi salam. We would like to offer, again, our condolences to our esteemed listeners on this most grave and solemn day. You know, it's interesting to note that Imam Ali alayhi salam has a large sermon. It's been narrated in the Nahjul Balagha, the famous book of hadith of Imam Ali, sermons of Imam Ali, and also his letters and his small sayings, aphorisms, regarding the demise of the Holy Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. Imam Ali gave a sermon, gave a short speech on this occasion. It was recorded. Today, let's read a little bit about what Imam Ali alayhi salam said regarding this grave event. You know, it's interesting to note that if you look at the Nahjul Balagha, in almost all of his sermons, all of his sayings, Imam Ali alayhi salam mentions the Holy Prophet. He alludes to him in some way. In the beginning of this small speech, Imam Ali alayhi salam says, "Bi abi anta wa ummi ya Rasulullah, may I be sacrificed for you. May my father and mother be sacrificed for you, O Prophet of God. Laqad inqata'a bimawtika ma lam yanqati bimawti ghayrik. Something was cut off at your death, which has not been cut off from the death of anyone before it." Anyway, your death has caused a loss for us,